So are you an archivist? Are you an ethnographer? Or are you an artist? Or is it all those things?
All of those things. And I do consider myself a Seattle Sonic historian. Several of my my previous albums focus on the soundscape here in Seattle. And what the soundscape simply is, it's not a fancy term, but the soundscape is essentially all of the sounds that we make together, whether it's the droning of cars in the background, kids playing in the field, conversations that we're having right now, the buzz of a refrigerator, all of those things comprise the soundscape. So it's my duty as a composer, and this is something composers have done for centuries and most likely millennia, is ask people to listen, provide something that is worth listening to, and that ideally, in when you're really lucky, and very few of us get really lucky, create something that not only stands the test of time but moves the soul. And so I would not make such an extravagant claim for Favorite Intermissions, but what Favorite Intermissions does do is preserve and, I hope, promulgate a neglected soundscape. It's my hope that the next time you're at an orchestra concert, that anyone's at an orchestra concert, instead of getting up and going and getting a drink or milling around and talking, just listening and seeing what happens.
Is that how you discovered what's going on during intermission at these orchestral concerts?
Yes. One of the things that I do is I go to a lot of orchestral concerts all across the country, and many of them are quite disappointing in terms of not having really any new or adventurous music. I love Beethoven. Beethoven is very close to me. But when I go to a concert, I also want to hear something new. A concert should happen for a special reason. It should be an occasion. And playing old music, and just old music, generally is not much of an occasion, especially when it's done over and over and again, time and time again. But when a concert is programmed in an interesting way, bringing in the old, the new, the unknown, and the well-known, then I think we can hear those old favorites, those old war horses, anew. So what happened to me is I was sitting at these concerts and I started watching the musicians. Schoenberg said that you can learn more about Mahler's music by watching Mahler tie his tie than by listening to all of his symphonies. And what he meant by that is not to be a groupie and to be Mahler's factotum, but by observing musicians and watching what they do, there are things that we can learn that are not taught in school, that even musicians themselves might not be able to communicate, and that ultimately enhance the listening experience. That's ultimately what it's all about. So I hope that listeners go to a concert and they listen to an intermission and they watch the musicians improvise. And improvise in a way that jazz musicians do not do, that free improvisers do not do, and that even experimental musicians do not do. It's an entirely new and different form of improvisation that I don't think has been documented and that I think yields wonderful musical rewards.
Do classical players jam?
Well, here's what's interesting is that you don't even need to know the music that they're playing. What happens at intermission, and this is not by no means universal. Some orchestras allow this, some orchestras do not. It depends on the music director, the particular orchestra, where you happen to be. But the musicians come out at intermission and they practice and warm up on the most difficult, generally the most difficult pieces in the program. And what can happen is, say, you'll have a piccolo player, and they will be rehearsing, he or she will rehearse several measures. And the percussionist, who's 20 feet away, might think, oh, yeah, that's a tricky part for me too. We're all playing together, but only the piccolo player and the percussionist are out there. So the percussionist will join in. And the percussionist might lose interest and say, oh, well, flip a few pages, practices something else, adjust the snare on his or her snare drum. The piccolo player might just be repeating the same bars over and over and over, even though that's not what the score is called for. So what we have is not only a transformation of music that we are expecting to hear, but this strange conjoined improvisation where musicians drop in and out of listening to each other. And that's something that kind of contravenes the ideal in improvised music, in freely improvised music and in jazz. The ideal is that as one of continual, constant communication. And I think that's a great ideal, because going and hearing, you know, bad jazz where people don't have it together, that's not fun. But when musicians are able and skilled enough to flit in and out of each other's aural space to sort of remake the soundscape without not necessarily always being concerned with the group picture, that I think yields interesting results.
Everyone who's ever been to a symphonic or orchestral concert is used to that cacophony before the show, where all the players are on stage and they're doing their scales, they're warming up. It sounds like quite a wash of noise. Are you saying that, is there something to be discerned from those sounds, something that you could pick out if you were to carefully listen that we may not notice, because all we're hearing is an orchestral warm-up?
Absolutely. I have a huge archive of various orchestras warming up from across the country. And every orchestra tunes differently. Generally, an orchestra will take between 30 to 60 seconds to tune up. But even here in Seattle, if you compare the Seattle Symphony, say, with the Russian National Orchestra, although actually the Russian National Orchestra did not tune up when they came out, which is quite interesting. They tuned up at the half. That's another interesting custom to observe. But when a visiting orchestra comes, say the Dresden Staatskapelle or someone like that, you will hear different musical personalities. And what that warming up is, and what that cacophony does, is act, it should act, ideally, it should act as an invitation to hear, it's not cacophony, but polyphony, to hear the different melodic lines that are interweaving. Some of it won't make any sense. Again, there's kind of a risk in listening to this stuff, in that, you know, when we go hear Beethoven, Beethoven delivers the goods. You know, you know, the symphonies, the piano concerti, the late string quartets, the Razumovsky string quartets, masterpieces, wonderful things. And there is a risk, if you know the music, well, maybe, you know, maybe the allegro is going too slow or something like that. But entering in a sonic situation where it's completely unpredictable, that in a sense leaves it to the listener to find the music therein. And I'm not going to say or promise that every time it's going to be great. Sometimes it'll just be a boring wash of sound. I've recorded lots of those. But other times, I remember there's one instance, actually there's a remarkable instance on the Favorite Intermission CD of a flute warm-up, where listeners will hear an amazing, astounding maze of flutes all warming up, all in real time, all unedited. It was one of those things that I sat there and I realized, my goodness, I've been making recordings for just about 2 decades now, and this is one of the keepers. It's going to be one of the things I'm going to remember in my dying days.
Do you know what track that is?
Yes, that's SF Variations.
Okay, so here you are going into a concert hall, bringing your recording equipment, patently illegal, I assume. How do you get away with this?
Well, I have body-mounted microphones, and I'll leave it at that. They're placed in different places on my body, depending on the position of the stage, where I'm sitting, how close I can get to the orchestra. It really depends. But I do try and be unobtrusive, and there are of course times when other things trump recording. I was in New York earlier this year, and there was a frail old woman, and I was thinking she was all by herself, and I was thinking, and I was looking at her. And she was leaning against the stage, and I was capturing this wonderful violinist just doing a solo warm-up, and she dropped her cane. Flap! Thud! And she was bending down to get it. Which, of course, if all of us who have grandparents know that that a fall can be very precipitous, precarious thing. So I said, ma'am, wait, hang on, let me get that for you. And so I bent over. You know, and smiled, and I'm a big guy. I don't have any hair on my head. Some people think I look intimidating, even though I'm quite friendly. So I always, hey, let me help you. And so, thank you very much. And I went back to try and record what I had done, but by bending over, I had actually disconnected my deck. And, but again, it was more important, far more important, that woman have her cane and not fall and not hurt herself, then, I get that. So sometimes you do, there are ones that get away.